It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Joanna Stern from ABC News joins Andy Iannocco and Dwight Silverman to talk about the new mega upload. We go to New Zealand with Paul Spain to get a look, a first look. We also talk about Facebook's graph search and a guy in Las Vegas who does not have your iPhone. He swears it. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android.
Video bandwidth for Twit is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 389, recorded January 20th, 2013, 73% editorially independent. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com now. Click on the microphone and enter Twit. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT1. And don't forget to try their brand-new developer platform for complete code control. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with clients and colleagues anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Leo Laporte here with a great panel to help us discuss the week's tech news, including from the Houston Chronicle, Dwight Silverman. blogs.cron.com/techblog. Hello, Dwight. Actually, it's blogsingular.cron.com.
Blog singular. Yes, we dropped the S in a fit of modernization.
It's simplification.
Like Foxborough.
Foxborough. We were talking about that. It's spelled differently for the stadium than the town.
That's right. And so We're just one blog now.
It's going to be crazy at Foxborough in a minute. Andy Iannocco is nearby. So the crowds, can you hear the crowds, the cheers, the roars?
Oh, I've been charging people $30 to park in my front yard, even though I'm actually about 60 miles away.
Hey, there's, you know, sometimes
here.
It's a long walk, but it might be a nice day. Andy's with the Chicago Sun-Times. Great to have you. Also a regular on Mac Break Weekly and slumming a little bit on the Sunday show.
Nice it is the Lord's Day, but I'll make an exception for you, Leo.
Yeah, and it's also a Patriots game, which is very nice of you. And, of course, from ABC News, Joanna Stern is here. It's so nice to have you once again, Joanna.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks
I know we've been trying
us.
To – I don't think I've been on for, like, maybe a year.
Oh, that's horrible, and I apologize. It is way too long. And,
no, it's been my fault.
Well, I think we've asked you. Don't make them.
Yeah.
Don't make
oh,
people think I'm
fault.
A jerk.
But I think, you know, I don't know. You being in the studio alone is what's going on?
Sad. Well, somehow nobody will come here. I think there was a football game on. I might be wrong, but
oh,
I think there was
right.
a football game on.
That football game.
That's
Can't
not
wait
the,
to talk about it.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure you're dying to. We'll get into all of that in a little bit. But first, we want to go to New Zealand. Because that's where Paul Spain is. He is on the NZ podcast. He also is writing this up for Mashable because he's covering the biggest website launch in some time. Kim.com's mega launched yesterday. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how you doing?
It was exactly 1 year ago that Mega Upload was shut down. The servers were confiscated by the feds, and Kim.com was arrested. He still has not been extradited, right? He's still in New Zealand, I think. What's the latest on his case?
So his extradition has been pushed out to later in the year, probably September at this stage. So he's got plenty of time to kill before any chance that he has to face his accusers in the US, which I guess is the reason why he's started a new business.
Why not?
The United States Department of Justice, of course, shut down Mega Upload, claiming it was a haven for piracy. The DOJ's statement in the case a year ago was that this action is among the largest criminal copyright cases ever brought by the United States and directly targets the misuse of a public content storage and distribution site to commit and facilitate intellectual property crime. Kim.com didn't help the case much because he was somewhat of a flamboyant character. Doesn't he have a car with a license plate gangster?
Yeah, he's got a one with, well, he had a number of license plates like that, you know, evil. He had one with, which said police on it. Yeah, he's a bit of a character, but it's sort of unclear, really, how people feel about him. There seems to be really sort of mixed opinions here in New Zealand. I imagine it's the same all around the world.
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of people upset about Mega Upload's shutdown because they had legitimate files on the site. It was a file sharing site. It wasn't intended to be a piracy, or maybe it was, but people treated it like Dropbox or any other file sharing site and had legitimate stuff there, which they lost access to because the feds took all the servers. So Kim has launched a new business. Tell us about Mega. It launched like it was it was DDoSed practically by people trying to sign up.
Yeah, they had within the first 2 hours, there was 250,000 sign-ups is what we're told. And by the time of the press conference in the evening, there were some 500,000 members to the new mega.co.nz website. But it's been very patchy in terms of access to the site. And even today, trying to access it, many people have found that that they just can't reach the site.
You know, he's a showman, obviously. And instead of calling this, well, Mega is called the Privacy Company, which is kind of obviously a play on piracy. Bigger, better, faster, stronger, safer. I'm surprised he doesn't say sexier. Who's signing up? And is it because they are desperate to become members of this or because they just want to participate in what is obviously a pretty big show?
Well, it is a big show, and Kim has a huge following around the world, and he's had a massive amount of media attention, really, in the last few months. And in fact, he said yesterday that New Zealanders are probably sick of all the media attention he's had, and following this launch, he's going to be pretty quiet up until his extradition hearing. But he's certainly been playing on the notoriety that he's gained through his arrest last year and the raid on the .com mansion, which in fact they played out a dramatized version of that raid last night for the launch. So there was a helicopter that swirled in. There were men clothed in black with automatic weapons that abseiled off the roof of the house and then sort of circled around the audience. So it was a pretty entertaining spectacle, I've got to say.
Did you go?
We had a smaller time. We were the small group session that they had for a few media in the afternoon. There were about 10 of us that got to spend some time directly with Kim, asking him a range of questions. And then they had the broader event in the evening where there were probably 200 or 300 people in attendance.
I don't want to monopolize, Paul. So Andy or Joanna or Dwight, if you have questions you'd like to ask. We've got a man on the ground at the .com mansion. He's not in custody right now, is he? Is he just walking about?
Yeah, he's been producing music. He's been obviously working on this new business venture with a number of partners, including his three co-accused. He's found a number of people to fund this because most of his funds have been locked up. Due to what's going on, most of his assets were seized. Apparently, some $100+ million worth of assets. So he's had to get outside investors in, and he seems to have a few friends about the place. that helped him pay his rent whilst he was in jail. And some of those people have come to the party and are supporting this new endeavor.
Paul, has the either the U.S. Authorities or the New Zealand authorities had anything to say about Mega? Have they basically said, you better watch your step, pal, or had anything at all where they've essentially said, you look like you're doing the exact same thing you did before?
They haven't heard any comment at all. It's possibly too soon for that. But what's come from his legal team is that that this has been the most scrutinized tech launch in history from a legal perspective, and they believe that they're squeaky clean as far as stepping over any legal lines.
Now, is this guy part of like the pantheon of like the cast of characters we all know who are tech CEOs and do things, or is he just like in New Zealand it's just thought of people who are into tech know of this thing that's happening on their soil, and otherwise regular people don't care? Is he a personality over there? Is it?
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's had just so much media coverage over the last few months that everyone knows who he is, to the point where there are certainly people that have been saying, we are sick of seeing and hearing about Kim.com. he's had enough time in the limelight. But there's another group that are just very excited about anything that he does, and we're very, very quick to sign up for the site. Obviously, with those others around the world.
Of course, 50 gigabytes of free storage is one reason to sign up, and that's a good deal. Go ahead,
right.
China.
That's my question is, do you really think this service has a real shot given, it's a very compelling deal, right? 50 gigs free, $9.99 or €9 a month for 500 gigs. I mean, crazy deal, and I would assume consumers would be interested, but given the history, why would anyone trust their files on this kind of service?
Well, I think they trust their files on the service because they first and foremost, they love Kim.com. They love what he stands for in terms of internet freedom and free file sharing and so on. So there's that audience that I think will sign up straight away. And I guess we have to just wait and see to how the service performs, how long it takes for the downloadable apps to appear on smartphones, on Windows and Mac and Linux and so on. There's a lot that's been promised down the track. He also showed off yesterday on Twitter the Mega Movie service, which they had started developing ahead of his arrest. And they detailed the Mega Key, which itself is somewhat controversial.
I've been trying to sign up since we began the show, and I still have a rotating ball. It's not easy to get an account at this point. The servers are well overwhelmed, and it's interesting. I mean, he really is. You're right.
Go back to that screen. I need to get Leo's password.
it's eight dots. Just write it down.
Uploading your entire hard drive there, right?
At 50 gigs. I'm happy. I'm there. I'm in. What could possibly go wrong? Let me ask.
I'm going to spend the rest of the show doing this.
Yeah, you probably will. I mean, I'm still waiting. What is the New Zealand government's attitude toward Kim.com, Paul?
Well, there's been some controversy there too, and because the New Zealand spy agency, the GCSB, was actually spying on Kim.com. And they're by law are only allowed to spy on people that are not citizens. And as it happened, he had already become a resident at the stage that they were spying. So they had well overstepped their mark. The Prime Minister had been alerted to some of this activity. I don't think anyone maybe joined the dots and realised that he was a resident at the time. But there's certainly been some comments that the Prime Minister is forgetful around some of the things that he heard and has made some statements that have probably got him into a little bit of hot water around the situation.
Kim.com's career is somewhat checkered. He's actually a German citizen. A young internet tycoon who was later convicted of embezzlement. went to New Zealand and has the mega mansion is in fact a mega mansion. I mean, it's a beautiful place. So he's obviously made some money. The assets, the CNN says the assets that were served as seized in this action, including the servers in Virginia and Washington D.C., were worth $50 million. Was this money all made legitimately through mega upload?
Well, I guess that comes down to whether you believe that the mega upload is legitimate or not. I don't think there's any question that there was a lot of sharing of copyrighted content. But
you could probably say that on Dropbox and any other site is whether they encouraged it and what they did about it, I guess, right?
Well, I guess from the encouragement side, what they did was, they incentivized, people to have their content downloaded. So if you uploaded something and it was downloaded a lot, then there were some incentives. Now, interestingly, the limitations around that was that the files had to be under 100 megs for you to receive that incentive. So Kim.com made a point of that from the stage yesterday and saying, well, it's ridiculous that people would accuse us of using this to distribute movies because the files were too small. But actually what happened is that the files were broken down and people would break them down to be under that 100 megs into a few pieces. And those files would be RARed, and so then they would join those files up together after downloading them. So that particular statement probably doesn't put Kim.com in a particularly good light because
he knew better.
Those that use the service knew that. He wasn't really sharing the full story, shall we say?
You may remember just shortly before they were shut down. The controversy over the song, the MegaUpload.com song that had P. Diddy and Chris Brown and a lot of celebrities, a lot of musicians performing on the song, and then their record labels complained, saying, we didn't give them permission. The song got pulled down and put back up and pulled down and put back up. It's currently up right now. It sounds like artists liked Mega Upload because it was a great distribution facility for them, but the record labels didn't like it so much because they feared they were losing revenue.
Well, would you use it to distribute podcasts?
Sure. If the price is right, why not? And that's the point, is that they're just as maybe there is piracy, maybe even encouraged it, but it's also used for legitimate files as well. Did he say anything yesterday about attempting to make the new Mega more copyright friendly?
I think he said all the right things. That they were legal. He said that there were takedown processes and so on. He said the right things, but he didn't, I guess, suggest that they would be any more restrictive on copyrighted content than what MegaUpload.com was. Now, the other point that I'm not sure we've discussed yet is that the big differentiator for this site from his perspective is that it encrypts all the content that goes online, so they can't actually look. The files that sit on the servers are encrypted, so somebody would have direct access to the servers does not have access to the content without the encryption keys.
Right. Paul Spain is a podcaster, tech journalist. You can look for his coverage of this on Mashable and on the NZ podcast. Where can we find that podcast, Paul?
NZTechPodcast.com.
Thank you so much for joining us from New Zealand.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. What a fascinating story.
So, Leo, I was able to get on while I got an account, but it has kind of hung up on generating my 2048-bit encryption key. So I've just got some gears turning, and I'm waiting for my key. But I was able to get in, and I do have an account.
Well, start sharing some movies, music, books.
I've got all these old Twit podcasts that I can.
Hey, that you can. That's legit. We're creative commons. Right.
So one of the interesting things is about this is the bandwidth sufficient? I mean, yeah, he's got, you know, is this a rush? But if he's offering 50 gigabytes free and, you know, 500 for a relatively low price, and it's doing this right now, is this is he going to have the bandwidth to handle the size of the content that's going to be uploaded and downloaded from here?
There's so many weak points here that they could pinch him off in his money supply. They can pinch him off in bandwidth. They can pinch him off in server location. I'm wondering how long it's going to be before people think that people will have confidence that Mega Upload is going to be here a year from now. Because one of the great things about SkyDrive, Dropbox, and all those other services is that you know that if you put a file there, Amazon is probably not going away. Google also likely not going away anytime in the next 2 or 3 years. And you won't find yourself with 40, 50 gigabytes worth of data that suddenly is now locked up by the Justice Department.
We're going to take a break.
Totally.
When we come back, we'll talk more about the tech news. But that story, you know, one thing we can agree on, I think, Kim.com is a mega showman. And it makes it fun to cover the story when you got somebody like Kim.com stirring up interest. Joanna Stern is with us from ABC News, from the Houston Chronicle, Dwight Silverman, and from the Chicago Sun-Times. It's Andy Iannocco. We've got like real journalists on the show today. Holy cow!
Let's just take the pressure off by saying that two of us are real journalists. The other one is the third one is a fake who's hoping not to be found out.
And that you figure out which is which.
Wait a minute.
Adam Engst at Macworld.
Actually, guys.
Yeah.
I am Manti Te'o's girlfriend. So.
Oh, we found her. You so said you didn't know anything about football.
True. That's true.
She lives. Good luck. Thank you, Joanna Stern. All right, we're going to take
just
a break.
Just call me Lene.
What was her name?
Lene.
Lene Kakua.
Lene Kakua, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
ABCnews.com.
In the flesh.
In the flesh. And... We're brought to you today by our friends at stamps.com. You don't have to go to the post office anymore. I give you permission to stay home and print your own postage. Sounds like something Kim.com might have thought up, but no, in fact, it's completely legal. It's stamps.com. All you need is your printer, your computer, and an account with stamps.com. You print the postage you need. You know, I didn't know this, but they said the postage rates are going up. It's like they need more money? What? So anyway, no, it's not that, but you don't have to get new stamps now. You just... Stamps.com automatically updates, unlike a postage meter, automatically updates the rates. In fact, our free trial gives you a nice little scale that you can plop your letter or package on. It's a USB scale. It tells the software how much it weighs, and you always have exactly the right postage. Never a penny more than you need to spend. Never a penny less. And one of the things I love about Stamps.com is you get discounts on priority mail and express mail. You just can't get at the post office. And then, of course, the mail carrier comes, picks up the package. You never have to get up from your desk. Try it today. Absolutely free. Go to stamps.com, and you see that $80 value. That's a great special offer, but don't do that. Click the radio microphone for a little bit of a better deal we've got for you here. Enter the offer code TWIT, and that $80 offer turns into a $110 bonus offer. $55 in postage you can use over the next few months. The digital scale is yours for free. You just pay postage and handling. I think it's $5. You get a $5 supply kit to make up for that and a four-week trial of stamps.com. This is a pro tip for anybody who does a lot of mailing. Takes the data right from the page if you're PayPal, Amazon, Etsy, eBay, all of those, or from your address book. If you use QuickBooks, it takes it from there. It automatically prints. It'll print right on the envelope. If you're mailing out bills, it's great because your logo's on it, the stamps, and your return address plus the recipient's address. Automatic, fast, easy to use stamps.com. Use the offer code TWIT for that $110 bonus offer. And we thank Stamps.com for supporting our podcast. So you didn't get the beach ball, huh? I got the beach ball still on the mega beta. That's all right. I didn't really want an account. It'd be fun. Look at this mansion. This is a nice house.
The beach ball lasted for quite a while.
Did
and
it?
Then and then it cleared and sent me a confirmation to my email.
Okay.
And then it went, when I clicked the confirmation, it didn't accept the password that I had actually put in, refreshed the screen, and then it started generating my keys. There's a lot of glitches to it.
Yeah. Well,
and it's still generating the keys.
It's probably traffic, right?
Right. Hopefully. Hopefully it's not uploading all my stuff now.
You don't know, do you?
No, you do not.
So Facebook had a little bit of an event this week on Tuesday. Did anybody go? Anybody go over to the Facebook headquarters? No.
Mm, no.
You missed out. They announced social graph search. What about the worst name you could give anything? Since no human, besides those of us in the industry, know what a social graph is. Mm-hmm. Andy, what is Facebook's social graph search? I'll let you define it.
Well, whereas before they had sort of a lame search feature that was about as full-featured as what you'd find on a word processor in 1991. Now the idea is to make sure that no matter what's happening, and no matter what's been posted publicly anywhere in the Facebook world, not only is it searchable and findable, but also it's a search method that will also understand connections between all that data. So it's not just for seeing, well, what happened in last week's issue of Fantastic Four and what are people talking about it. It's also good for things like show me, and this is almost the natural language input of this, show me restaurants in New York City that have been liked by friends or friends of my friends. So if you're in the city, you don't know where to eat, you can find some place that's not just a random location, but here's a restaurant that some of my friends have actually liked, and you can get access to the information. And it's very, very wide and broad because you might immediately start thinking about it as I want to be able to look, get valuable information from all the data that my friends are putting in. But it's also things like give me a list of alumni of University of Massachusetts who now work for Pixar. And that will give you a list of people that you can say, hey, fellow alumni, give me a job. And hit people
that way.
That could
be good. Yeah.
I think it's very, very telling, though, that so much of Zuckerberg's pitch during this event was saying that it's not going to be whatever you we will obey what it's, the search feature is going to obey whatever privacy controls you've already set. So it's not as though a picture or a like or something you've written that is only supposed to be available to your friends will be visible to people outside of your circle of friends or outside of your family. On the other hand, it really does open things up to a much wider potential for exploitation now, because even if Facebook's claims of their user base is halfway true, that would be one Facebook user for every 14 human beings on this planet. And if you are trying to sell anything to anybody, oh boy, you just got an 8-pound Cadbury cream egg just delivered right to your doorstep from Facebook. So if I think that my own opinion is that if this were Apple, we'd think this is okay, interesting feature, a long time coming. If it were Google, we'd think, obviously, they're going to make a lot of money out of this, but they're probably going to deliver a service that's going to be profoundly useful because they like to integrate things from all the internet at once. With Facebook, you're like, oh, man, how are they going to turn this into a way to make sure that they take more and more data from us than we ever intend to give up? And how is this going to wind up being something bad that makes me regret being a member of Facebook? And we're going to have to find out what that's going to be.
Mike Elgin said in his Datamation column, if you love Facebook, you'll love Graph Search. If you hate Facebook, you'll hate graph search. Is that what it comes down to, Joanna?
Yeah.
I'll let Joanna talk for a minute.
Andy said pretty much everything I was going to say. I actually think the service is really useful. I've got it, and it's so much more powerful than the old search crap that they had. So I'm able to find people faster, I was working on a story last week. It was just easier to find information on there. Of course, I think there's so much distrust in Facebook that people's reactions to this were, oh, my God, how are they going to start making money off of me? Oh, I have to go back and check all my information. And I wrote a story this week, just basic stuff. Go back and check what you've liked, because you might have liked stuff 10 years ago on Facebook or however long, you know, you started on Facebook. For me, it was in college. You liked something. Even I said in my article, like, let's say you liked something weed back in college. Now you're able to surface that information. That information is somebody goes search for people who like weed and your name comes up. So I think there's a lot of, yes, Zuckerberg said, you know, this respects all of the privacy concerns that anyone's going to have. It respects all the privacy settings that we have, but it also opens it up so much more, as Andy said.
One thing I think they changed, Lisa Chatroom saying, is that a few weeks ago they disabled the ability to say, I'm opting out of search. So you are now automatically required to participate.
Right. That happened about a month ago where they turned it off. And this is before anybody knew that social graph search was coming.
Yeah.
And so now you simply, you know, you can't walk away from it. But I don't recall if they said when they stopped that feature, if you had disabled search, are you grandfathered in? So those people who had said, I don't want to be part of search, do they get to stay?
What's certainly the case is that everybody should start looking at their settings, their privacy settings in Facebook, and make sure that you are, you know, blocking, because it does at least obey those, right? So if any like is are, Joanna, are all likes inherently public?
Yes. I'm pretty sure all likes are public. I think you can go back and, I mean, when you go to that like page, if you can share that just with your friends. I think that's also going to depend on, like, who can see your profile. Is it just your friends? Is it public? So that's all part of that.
But you see the problem. I mean, even Randy Zuckerberg's Mark's sister doesn't understand how this stuff works.
Right.
Mark doesn't understand. There's going to be leakage.
There's also a question of just how good the data that the Graph Search will have to work with. So, for example, a lot of people will like a brand or like a page in order to be entered into a contest. They don't necessarily actually like it, but they want to get something from that brand. And then they are stuck indicating that they like this page, you know.
You're not stuck because you can unlike anything you've liked.
Right. But how many people go back and do that?
Right. Nobody.
You know, if the stuff doesn't constantly show up in your feed and you're not annoyed by it, and that can happen, then suddenly you know the information that you have as to what you like doesn't actually reflect what you really like or what you really endorse.
So you should go to your timeline, go to your likes. I do this kind of fairly frequently, and now. Now they organize them by year, so you can go back in time and see what you liked in 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011. And I liked Amazon. I don't even know who this is. I don't know who they are. Washington Post Social Reader doesn't exist anymore. Apparently, there's a page called Leo Laporte Shirts. I do like that. I don't remember liking a lot of this stuff. It might be really a good idea to go through these and take them off, because this is part of the search, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I suggested. Gizmodo actually had a really funny article. You know, they did some stuff where it was like search for I actually won't even say what some of the search terms were.
Well, it's Gizmodo. It's Gawker. So we got an idea.
So people were they might have done it as a joke, but then someone goes and searches, let's say you're looking for a job or whatever the case may be, and you come up in that search. It's not a very good thing. So, you know, one of my suggestions was like, definitely go through your likes. Also make sure to set your preferences to only friends. You know, when you have that little box, when you share your status, it defaults to friends, but make sure you haven't switched it to public, and then you're sharing everything public. But definitely go through your likes.
Yeah, and good luck.
I spent time doing that this
Good week. Luck keeping that up to date. That's a full-time job because they keep changing things.
Well, I think as with the advent of this feature, people, if they're smart, will pay attention when they like something. I think it could change the behavior of what people do on Facebook, which I think is what Facebook wants. I mean, they ultimately want the data that's being pulled into the into this graph search to be of higher quality. So you're apt to now click on things that you actually like if you know that they're going to show up in one of these searches.
Boy, it sure is telling. This shows the two stories we just did, Mega and Facebook, show how reputation, how important it is. So Kim.com, who is, I mean, really, let's face it, a shady character, people love him. and so they're signing up by the hundreds of thousands for a service that who knows how reliable or safe it is at all. Meanwhile, Facebook, people are very wary of, and the almost immediate reaction to social graph search is, oh, my God. You know, what fresh privacy invasion is this? Mm. Just shows you how your reputation really colors everything.
Yeah, and now it seems with Facebook becoming so important to marketing and to profiling that now even those of us who decide that I don't want to have a presence on Facebook, I don't want to be active on Facebook, that too is being taken by some people as here is a sign of how we know, here's how we know who Andy Notko is. He doesn't want to post anything on Facebook.
Right.
And the worry, and this might be getting uncomfortably close to the margin of paranoia, but if you are competing very, very aggressively with three or four other candidates for a job, and whoever's doing the screening can feel as though they can get a very complete picture from three of them because of their Facebook activity, and you're more of a cipher, maybe that's at least going to take 5 points off of your final score. And if that's enough to deny you a job, that's kind of a little bit worrisome.
I'm ashamed to admit it, but if somebody doesn't have a Facebook page, I probably would be less likely to consider hiring them here.
Right.
Well, you're a special case. That would indicate that someone who is supposed to be working for a really seriously tech oriented company doesn't have a Facebook account, as opposed to like having it like me. I have a Facebook account and I access it maybe every week or two, chiefly just to read the status updates of like my nieces and my nephews. All this, I mean, I talk to my family, but it's not as though I'm going to call them every other day to find out, hey, did you do it? Did you happen to do a half marathon last week? If so, how did you do? And is there a picture that you can send me?
Right.
But Facebook is good for stuff like that. But really, for what do I like? What am I interested in? My Facebook activity pretty much leaves me as a cipher. And so that's
suspicious, frankly. Who is this Andy Anatko anyway?
Who are you?
I'm the wind, baby. You're not supposed to understand me.
So Leo,
I want to be the Kaiser Soze of the tech world. Okay, I said it.
So my main job now at the Chronicle, I'm the social media manager.
Are you?
Yes,
interesting.
I run the Facebook page. I oversee our Twitter account. I work with our journalists who use social media both in reporting and in pushing out our news. And when the Graph Search was announced, I sent a note to the staff as soon as I kind of got what it was and said, this is a great reporter's tool. And it really is. I mean, in terms of like Facebook probably should have done something like this years ago.
You mean for finding sources or
for finding out information about people you're writing about? I mean, Joanna mentioned that she had done a story and used it as part of a story. And I think every journalist would be interested in that. I also am active at the Chronicle in terms of our marketing and our promotion of some of the things that we do. And I can see it on that end being very useful in terms of targeting. I think that'll take a while to kind of sort out for that. But for journalists, this is a gold mine, I think.
Yeah, no, I was doing a story on the Aretha Franklin hat meme from the 2009 inauguration.
Yes.
And I wanted to see if I could find the first picture that was on there. And I actually couldn't, but I wanted to see how many shares it had or how many likes it had. But I was able to find so much more information about that.
Wow.
Than I probably could have last week.
Now, so you...
Or maybe it just took less time.
You have this. I don't have the search. Dwight, do you have it?
Yes, I got it yesterday.
And Andy, did you get? Well, Andy doesn't use Facebook, so I.
Right.
I didn't have it as of day two of the feature. I should check again this weekend.
So I haven't had a chance to play with it, so that puts me a little bit of a disadvantage.
If you go look in my Twitter feed from yesterday, I took a screen grab of the. There's a little box that you'll see at the top of your screen, and if you go look in my Twitter feed, you can find the link to the image that shows what it looks like. It basically says you have it, you want to take a tour, and it gives you some examples. None of them are like the Gizmodo examples, but it does give you some examples.
Let me look at your feed. I posted one later.
In my feed, I did Asian restaurants that my friends like, and it pulled up several Asian restaurants that are near me, and some of which I was unaware of. And so now, you know, I have some more to try.
But is that more useful to you than going on Yelp or going on Urban Spoon or something like that?
It's another source of information. You know, I probably right now, because of my habits, I would use Yelp. I don't know what this looks like in mobile yet.
They don't have mobile yet.
Yeah, they don't have mobile. So I would say probably that the mobile is the big play, because what you want to be able to say is, show me Asian restaurants my friends like that are near where I am now. Yeah. That's the play.
Yeah.
Well, you can be sure that's coming.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. You know, they didn't talk about mobile at all. We all thought, or I think most of us thought, that event was going to be about mobile. And even if I actually did think it might have something to do with search. We were all talking about this at CES last week or 2 weeks ago. What is this event going to be? And I said, well, maybe search, but I definitely thought it was going to have a mobile tie-in. And there were some really interesting pieces written last week, one written by Tim Carmody at The Verge, you know, sort of they didn't talk about mobile at the event, but you absolutely can see that that is really the big push with this. I think it's written, it's totally going to have a much bigger mobile tie-in, I think, than even what you get on the web right now.
Now, Dwight, I'm looking at your Twittered Asian restaurant search, and I see stars, four-star restaurant. What are those stars based on?
I am not sure.
Uh-huh. And it's good. I mean, you get hours. They've ranked it by stars. You've had the number of people who checked in. The doesn't say how many of your friends liked it.
No, it just brings it up as the search. And I imagine you might be able to say how many of my friends like Jenny's Noodle House, and then you would see those friends. So you might be able to come back in and see who it was.
So what's the stars? We don't know. And the other issue is maybe your friends like a lot of Asian restaurants, but I don't go around liking most of the kind of day-to-day enterprises. You know, I mean, how many people like their plumber or dentist? That's not going to be useful. I think it's going to be a limited... I don't know. It's going to be limited.
Yeah, I shouldn't be quite so harsh against it, because I think the main problem is that I just don't see what problem that this solves. Or I see the problems that this solves for Facebook employees who want to make sure they can get their bonuses at the end of the year. I just don't see how this helps like regular people who, if you've got even if this were available on mobile, if you have an iPhone, Siri can get you that kind of information much faster. If you've got Android, Google Search and voice search can get you that information much faster. Independent apps that have 2, 3, 4, 5 years of pedigree now for giving you not only just reviews and information, but really fine-grained information about these places that you want to go. So I think that I feel as though I have to write about it again like 6 months to a year from now when people figure out how to use it and when those that unique graph search flavor starts to make itself more known.
Speaking of flavors, is this, Joanna, a threat to Google or just the flavor of the month?
Sorry, I'm still trying to figure out where those stars are from.
I mean, really, should Google be worried about this? I mean, Google clearly wanted some of these kinds of signals. That's why they created Google Plus.
By the way, I think these stars are from Microsoft, because they're using Microsoft. They're using Bing.
There's big Bing integration here. I don't think people really talk so much about how Bing is integrated into this, but I think it's a big part of it.
So, vice versa. Some of the Google stuff, right? I think that answers the question you're asking right now. I mean, Facebook and Microsoft have clearly a close alliance. If you look at some of the Bing social search stuff, Facebook is really integrated into that. And now them using Bing as a platform here. So Microsoft is definitely a big winner. I think, you know, there was some harsh words, right, last week from, was it Eric Schmidt talking about how...
I think it was Larry Page who mocked Facebook even before the social graph announcement. And, of course, you've got to think that Larry is not merely saying Facebook sucks, but saying Facebook is a feared competitor, and I hope they suck.
But I actually think, I mean, like I was saying, back to the mobile stuff, I thought it was really interesting they didn't talk about it. And then the next day they had this announcement that you can make these free calls in the Messenger app. So it might, you look at Facebook and you're thinking, okay, this was a really big desktop web push. But I do think there's something really big there going on with the mobile. I think, you know, all the rumors of the Facebook phone, I've been saying, I wrote an editorial last week saying, they're building this phone right in front of our face, and it's not might not even be a hardware phone. I think we all kind of feel like it's not, but they are building the software and they're turning our phones into Facebook phones.
Yeah.
And I think this is just another push in that direction, and that in itself is going to be competition for Google as they continue to try and push their social services on the phone. I mean, it's the war of the services.
I like Google's strategy in this. Google does build phones, but Google also gets on every other platform, except maybe Windows Phone, but on the iOS platform by making great apps that iOS users use in preference in many cases to the Apple apps that come with their phone.
Right. Facebook is doing exactly what Google is doing on iOS.
Well, they don't need to make a phone.
What I like about Google's approach is that Facebook's part of their strategy is to keep you inside Facebook as long as possible. They are like the casinos that make sure you can't see outside the windows, make sure there's a steakhouse, make sure there's a hotel, make sure there's Celine Dion so that you never have a reason to leave the facility, so that you stay there losing money to the casino, not to somebody else, least of all a cab driver. Whereas Google's strategy is more like, we want to make sure that wherever you're going to congregate anyway, we're in a position to help you in a way that you're going to want to give us some of your money. Here money translates into user data and the social graph. So it really depends on which one of these points of view is more clicked into how people want to use their services. Facebook is great because it is really all there. There are people who don't really want to manage multiple apps. They don't want to learn about a new service that just launched 4 months ago. They just want to go to Facebook every single day to find out about the grandchildren, find out about their who they went to high school with, find out about their coworkers. And so long as they're going to go there anyway, why not just stay here and, again, eat at the steakhouse and see Celine Dion?
I like Jeroko's suggestion. He says Facebook needs to take a page out of the Vegas hotels and start pumping pure oxygen into their page. And we'll just stay there forever. It was Stephen Levy of Wired Magazine interviewing Larry Page. He asked him, he said, one place where people say Google is motivated by competition is the social realm. In the past 2 years, you've been working hard in a field dominated by a single rival, Facebook. That's not the case. Page says, it's not the way I think about it. We had real issues with how our users share information, how they express their identity, and so on. That's true. Google Plus really struggled with that. And yeah, Facebook is a company that's strong in that space, but they're also doing a really bad job on their products. I don't know. Is that true? Is Facebook doing a really bad job on their products?
I think Facebook's been spending a lot of time cleaning up their products. I don't think any of us would say that Facebook had beautiful products or has beautiful products now. I think we would say that about some of Google's recent releases, but I think Facebook's spending some time at least focusing on that.
I think Facebook's, however you feel about Facebook, they're clearly doing something right. They've got a lot of users. Yeah.
Well, if that's where all your friends are, it really doesn't care. It really doesn't matter how clean the software is and how easy it is to use. If that's where all your family is, all your friends are, all your coworkers are, that makes it instantly attractive. And all they can do is make this grease those rails a little better. I don't think that Facebook is easy to use. I'm not totally an expert in technology, and yet I'm still just routinely baffled by, I have a simple thing. I want to find out what my niece is up to last week, because I know she had a game, and finding that one piece of information is amongst the huge scrum of data that it wants to throw me at me to distract me is just really, really difficult. Maybe social graph search will make it easier to find that sort of information. But no, I would agree that they aren't very good at crystallizing what you're supposed to be here for. The message from Facebook is that you're here to stay here. That's the purpose of you coming here. But don't try to come here with any targeted goal, I don't think.
Well, and if you look at Facebook just looks... It's cluttered. It looks awful. Trying to find out how to do anything in it, as Andy said, is really difficult. And Google lately has paid much more attention to design. Remember, for years, we talked about Google being a company that was purely engineer-driven, and design was secondary. In fact, reports out of Google were that designers were kind of scorned. That's clearly changed with a lot of the apps.
If you're an iOS designer.
If you're an iOS right. designer, right. And so I think that, you know, Larry may be looking at what they're doing and thinking, you know, this is a mess. This is a cluttered mess. But again, if you look at Facebook's mobile apps, they were horrible, largely because of the HTML5 lag that they had. And now they're quite snappy, and they look pretty good too. And so I think that your mobile is driving design over to the desktop, and everything from operating systems to websites to mobile apps. And I think that you just look at what's going on with responsive design and website design. That's driven by a desire to look good in mobile and at the desktop. And so I think that's kind of what he's thinking about, is that they're kind of – Facebook is now where Google was maybe a year and a half ago.
Speaking of Wired, Cade Metz has a really interesting article in the Wired Enterprise section on Facebook – wanting a new kind of flash memory for storing old pictures. This is how far they've come. And how many hundreds of billions of images are they storing, and they're storing them all right now on spinning hard drives using a lot of power for images that you might not look at, but once a year, once every 5 years. So they want a way, an online storage, obviously, because they, the Facebook's director of infrastructure, Jay Parikh, says, we can't say, hey, you want to look at that picture from Halloween 5 years ago? We'll go grab the tape, put it on the drive, and send it to you in a week. It needs to be there right away. So they're looking for storage that doesn't use power, that just sits there, but that you can basically flash storage that you can you know, give some low power to, but still have those pictures available. That is, it's just amazing, just mind-boggling the amount of data Facebook already is storing.
In that story, he talks about having something that is very powerful in terms of storing it for long term, but for writing, it's low tolerance. And the thing I would worry about is all you need is that one bad burp, you know, where the tolerance is great and you lose data. So that would be the concern I'd have.
They also want to put flash in a cold storage facility. I guess it wears better. I don't know. And they're using, it's interesting, they're using Fusion IO's cards for their database software. And they're interesting tie-in, that's Waz's company. He took a job with Fusion IO a couple of years ago. They're an enterprise-grade flash drive company. We're going to take a break. I'm still waiting to get into mega.co.nz. Spinning the beach ball.
I'm waiting for my key.
They must have known it was you. I also am still waiting to get into Facebook's graph search. So there. And I'll probably be waiting to get into Apple's next event. So there. we're going to take a break, come back with more. We got a great panel. Real journalists. Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle, Joanna Stern from ABC News, and my friend Andy Anacco from MacBreak Weekly and the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. If you want to build a site that never goes down, you want Squarespace. Their web hosting plus the best content management system and that tight integration means that they can throw server bandwidth and storage at you whenever you need it, that you're always secure because they keep the software up to date. And the current version of Squarespace, Squarespace 6, is really groundbreaking in so many ways. Things like mobile responsive design, which means you could try it right now. Just go to squarespace.com. You don't need a credit card. Just click get started and you can start setting up a site. And any template that you use, customize it as you will automatically be mobile responsive. That means it will look great no matter how big the screen is. Anything from a 3.5-inch iPhone 3GS all the way up to a 27-inch Dell display, it's going to look fantastic. When you upload images, for instance, they automatically make 7 thumbnail sizes to make sure that they can display that image in exactly the most effective way. You don't have to worry about, you know, designing your columns or creating a mobile design, because these all resize perfectly depending on the size. I know that's a little thing, but it's just the fact that they could do this and still give you the kind of flexibility they give you is really amazing. If you're doing a portfolio, if you're a graphic artist, if you're someone who wants a site to look as good as your stuff looks, Squarespace is the place to go. Squarespace.com. Click the try it button and you can try it for 2 weeks absolutely free. No credit card, no offer code, nothing. Just your address, your email address, a password, and a name of a site. And, you know, it's kind of great if you need just a site for 2 weeks, just create it. If you decide you want to keep that site around for a little bit longer, maybe I think what you should, you know, as a baby gift, design a site for a kid with its, and get the kid's name, register it for a year, the name comes along with it, and then give it to the parents. That's an awesome gift, something like that. Or for a wedding, for your business, if just for a blog. They've got great iPad and iPhone and Android software. Really, they do nice iOS design. I must say, really gorgeous. Amazing stats. Of course, widgets that link you into all the social networks. Everything you need. And by the way, you can automatically import and export into all of the main sites, so you're never trapped at Squarespace. For example, you can automatically pull in your photos from Instagram. Boom, right there. Create galleries. Instantly sync pages to Facebook, auto-publish new blog entries on Twitter. It really is wired. Beautiful design. If you're a developer, you do have access to a developer platform that gives you a syntax, coloring, and the editor, and a whole lot more. Great for JavaScript or CSS. Over 300 fonts. They're using the Google Fonts Library. Try it free. And if you decide to buy, look at the pricing. Great deal. $8 for the basic account, $16 a month
for the unlimited account. Now, that's when you buy a year plan. You're going to want to buy a year plan because I'm going to show you how to get 10% off your first purchase for the most savings. But look at that, $16 a month. With the year registrations, you get the custom domain name and all the hookup free. You get unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs. Great for a photographer. If you're a wedding photographer, you can have a gallery for each client. Free. It's part of the deal. Unlimited bandwidth. One of your clients is Kim Kardashian. Don't worry about it. You'll never run out of bandwidth. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors, and a whole lot more. $16 a month. That's hosting and the software. You can't beat that. Now, I do want you to use the offer code TWIT1, and you could get 10% off that first purchase on new accounts. TWIT1, that's how they know you saw it on TWIT, and it helps us too. Squarespace.com. Your exceptional website is waiting. Squarespace.com. All right. Number of people. It's interesting. Facebook is for unloved. Number of people in the chat room said, I don't want to hear any more about Facebook. It's like, I'm done with Facebook. I don't care about Facebook. All right. How about Apple? What the hell's going on there? Here's another company people love. It's not doing so well. Apple's price per share is slipping now to $500, down $200 from their peak. Some say it's because iPhone demand is slipping. Different ways to interpret that story. And I guess we'll find out, is it this coming week that we're going to get?
Wednesday.
Yeah. We get the quarterly. Now, that won't be the most recent quarter, right? That'll be
the holiday quarter.
So I guess that'll tell us how the iPhone.
I'm trying to figure out what date it actually ends on. I know that it will include some holiday sales. I'm trying to remember what that is, but yeah, it's that's why a lot of the speculation about the health of Apple is kind of, I don't know, interesting. It's sort of like speculating about what the next iPhone is going to be like 2 days before the launch event for
it. We'll find out
because Apple is always very, very clear and upfront about numbers when they have things that they feel as though they have reason to be proud about. So if things are going great, they'll show us the numbers to show everybody that things are going great. If they are suspiciously absent of details on exactly how, on breaking down exactly how many units sold, exactly how much the iPad Mini is affecting regular iPad sales, how well the iPhone 5 did, especially given this the accelerated Hollywood accelerated holiday purchases compared to other Android phones that are on the market today. I mean, well, the numbers are going to tell that. So it's fun to speculate, but we're going to have all the numbers that we need to crunch on Wednesday.
By the way, kind of interesting. I don't know how they did this, but they're exactly $500 at the close of the stock market on Friday. $500 and no cents. Let's just stop. Let's just stop right here. It's perfect.
Yeah. I read a story about that, and I was still a little bit confused, but it has to do with put and sell options and them kind of coming at each other so that it balances at 500.
Oh, really?
So
that's how they did it? I mean, it's not
It's a series of automated routines where when it hits this amount, buy, when it hits this amount, sell, and they kind of hit and stick. Because so many are selling at buying and selling at that price.
One more thing I know I don't understand about the stock market. One more complete mystery to me. And yet, you got to think there's a little wisdom of the crowds going on with the stock market, right? I mean, it admittedly, any given investor is speculating and has no idea. But as a group, it often seems to reflect pretty well what the prospects are for a company. No.
Well, the stock price is really a faith index more than anything else. So it's how much do people believe that the valuation of this company is right where it should be, too high or too low. So that's why and when you're talking about a company like Apple that for so many periods before that has been just rising, is it reasonable and rational to expect that at some point inevitably the stock price should be 1,000 points? Now that's 1,000 points, the next step is it should be 1,200 points. Right. And once it doesn't make 1,200 points, that's, oh, wait, there must be something wrong with this company if it's not absurdly valued per share. So I mean, this is one area in which I have to humbly admit that understanding exactly why the stock moves is totally above my pay grade. And encouragingly enough, when I talk to an analyst who manages a a staggering amount of other people's money for a living. And they said, yep, nope, you're exactly, I don't really know what happens either. You just have to react to the numbers that you're seeing in front of you and hope that it doesn't, you know, hit you in the butt too hard.
Well, let's get the Real People Index. Joanna Stern, ABC News, technology editor. You talk to real people.
I talk to real people.
Is interest in the iPhone waning?
The initial sales we saw did not indicate that at all. Absolutely not. But I will actually point out, I was thinking about it last night when I was out with a bunch of my friends. I saw a lot more Galaxy S3s than I really have cared to see in the last, like, I just.
If I see another Galaxy S3.
I saw them all over the place last night. And I don't know, you know, maybe I was just hanging out with different people, but I'm definitely seeing a lot more of those. And I think, you know, everyone says, even a lot of the people that work at ABC will come to me and ask, you know, what is the best phone to get? What's the best laptop to get? Constantly when they're asking the best phone to get now, they go, I heard about the Galaxy S3, and then there's the iPhone. Which is it between these two?
Let's do a poll of our audience, our studio audience. This is a perfect sampling, completely random. How many of you are holding iPhones 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Android phones? 1, 2, 3. What, are you guys don't have phones? 4. It's about even.
We got a lot of votes in the chat room.
It's evenly split. Yeah. But I have to say, we were looking for an iPhone earlier, and we had a hard time finding one in the studio, right?
Remember that Android, as a whole, outsells iPhone.
But the question is to whom and why and where, right? Is it a low-end thing? Is it not in the U.S.? I think iPhone's still dominant in the U.S., is it not?
Yes.
In terms of just the individual brand, it is dominant in the U.S., but in the overall universe of platforms for smartphones, Android is dominant over. And I see a lot of, I agree with Joanna, I see a lot of S3s. You know what else I see a lot of?
What?
I see more and more Galaxy Notes.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'm a Note lover, so I notice them. So I don't know if it's, you know how when you get a new car, everybody's driving that car? I feel like I see a lot of Galaxy Notes, but you're seeing that too, huh?
Yes, and I love the Galaxy Note. It, depending on whether, you know, maybe like 40 inches by the time I buy my next phone.
I have a theory. I shared this before. I think the next iPhone should be an iPad mini.
I agree with you. I mean, that's... think you should put a phone in the mini.
Mini?
Yeah.
7-inch phone.
Yeah, I think Apple's definitely missing the boat on phone size. I think that I'm certain that the iPhone 5 sales numbers they're going to give us this week are going to be phenomenal. They're going to be wonderful. However, I do think they're leaving money on the table by not reacting to the popularity of these larger screen phones. And I mean, this were American Idol, we'd be all screaming at the same time. You're going to Hollywood, only we're saying that phone in your pocket is probably not an iPhone at this point in life, because over the past, I think it was this time last year, that I really started noticing that I'm seeing fewer and the people that I would expect to be carrying iPhones and using iPhones are now using not just Galaxy S3s, but any other kind of Android device. I think 2012 was the year that the iPhone really became, even in America, just another phone among many that people tend to like for whatever reason they tend to like phones.
Joanna, you said you hated the idea of a mini phone, iPad mini phone.
An iPad, I find the Note just too big to use.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
What do you carry?
I have a Galaxy Nexus.
Ah, interesting. And is that by choice, or do you feel that you have to cover Android, or...?
No, this was the phone I got last year. Actually, I carry around an iPhone as well, and then... I was always a longtime BlackBerry fan. And when I made the switch from BlackBerry, I really wanted a phone with a hardware keyboard. And I still really yearn for a really good phone with a hardware keyboard. And so I somehow got sucked into Android that way because there was no choice. You know, obviously the iPhone never had one. And I got hooked on Android. And now I'm actually considering getting an iPhone as my main phone because I've been really frustrated with Android. So really, to me, there's no perfect phone yet. And I carry around 3 phones every day.
Okay, so you're the wrong person to ask.
You are. Yeah,
I don't want a bigger phone. I want to carry 3 phones.
I carry 3 phones every day with me. It's crazy, but this is what I do.
Yeah.
I don't have my iPhone here, but this is ABC gives us BlackBerries.
Really?
Which, yeah. And you can get your email on your other phones, but I've really stuck to this because I can email so fast on
I agree.
And email is like one of the main communications. I mean, it's the only communication way at ABC that we really do IM
get
or
ready,
anything like that.
I think BlackBerry's back, baby. I think I'm very excited about BlackBerry 10.
I'm really excited about it. I tweeted about it this week and everyone was, I said, who else is really excited about BlackBerry 10 launching at the end of the month? And I got a range of responses, but I'm actually really excited.
I think we may be surprised. This is a dark horse that may surprise a lot of people. I think there's a lot of people like you and ABC and federal government that are still using BlackBerries and kind of love them and wish that BlackBerry had something competitive. And BB10 might be it.
Totally. I mean, I think we all know what the problems are going to be, but I think it'll be interesting to see what they come up with in terms of the design and how it all works together.
I want to say I have an open mind and I'm rooting for BlackBerry. Yeah. Or for RIM.
What I love about BB10 is the idea that, you know, I don't know anybody who has a BlackBerry who has just one phone on them at all times. It's usually people who have the one that their company issued to them. Then they also have their iPhone or their Android phone. That's their personal stuff. And the idea that they've really made a fundamental personality aspect of this operating system, the idea that here is one phone that keeps your personal life and your business life completely separate so that the IT department gets access to some areas of the phone. You personally have access to other parts of the phone, and that's kept safe and secure. So for people who don't particularly care about phones, and that sounds like I'm saying something mean-spirited about these people. I'm saying that normal people who really just want a functional device that has a narrow list of things that help them get them through the day, they might get their company-issued BlackBerry 10 phone and then realize that, well, gee, I don't really need to now have a contract for a second phone, especially if my IT department will let me use it for personal stuff as well as for the business stuff.
Dwight, you're the only one who hasn't weighed in. What do you think?
BlackBerry 10, from what I've seen of it, still leaves me cold. I think the train has left, and I don't think that they have enough momentum to continue going on much longer. I don't have much faith in it. I do understand now, though, why Joanna went to ABC News, because she could get a free BlackBerry.
Free BlackBerry.
That's right. I think it's too late. I think you can look and see what's kind of how Microsoft is struggling with Windows Phone. I think that, they're just now.
And Windows Phone, by the way, we should say, and I think everybody agrees, is great, but it's too late.
It's too late.
It's just too late.
I have to disagree with the words too late. That indicates that the race is over and there are now winners and losers. It's an ongoing process. And all that has to happen for Windows Phone to become completely competitive, or BlackBerry 10 to be completely competitive, is for iPhone to sort of tread water for a year or two. All that has to happen is for Android to.
But it is. It has been treading water for a year or two.
No, well, the numbers do not show that it's treading water.
Oh, but no, sales is a lagging indicator. It doesn't mean that they haven't been innovating. It just takes a while for people to catch on, and that's why you're starting to see the ramp up of the S3. But it's a lagging indicator, which means it's even if Apple turned it around tomorrow, it wouldn't necessarily turn around sales tomorrow. I think you're going to see deterioration of Apple's sales for a while.
You won't see
anything. I think it really depends on what they're going to do later this year with the next version. I think
they got to be careful. They got to be careful.
No, they got to be careful, but they also got to do something different.
The next version will be the 5S, if history follows. It'll be a tweaked version of the 5.
That will not be enough.
That will not be enough unless the tweaks are done in software. So it's very possible, and the software is what needs to update.
I
think you've seen a lot of writing.
Exactly.
It's the oldest mobile phone platform still out there. It's older than anything else except BlackBerry.
Except BlackBerry.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that the problem is that Apple has all these developers who have a huge investment in the current design and the API of the software.
They're going to have the problem Microsoft has of have to support legacy.
Right. And so what will probably happen is you'll see something similar to what Mountain Lion is, I think, which is kind of a hybrid of iOS and OS X. You'll see that come in one of these phones, and then they'll make a big leap and a big change. And they'll have to – you're right. They'll have to have something that will support legacy over time. But the other thing they could do is with the 6 – go big screen and do away with the current iOS design and start over. And then you support it on the older phones. You continue to have iOS on these older phones, but you have, say, iOS 2 or whatever they want to call it on the new larger phone.
I'm telling you, if Apple, listen to me, Apple. iPad mini phone. Huge. It's the if they did that, I would say they're going to turn it around. If they do a 5S...
Things are not going to happen.
By the way, my track record predicting stuff for Apple is zero.
I'm not sure. If
nobody does that anyway. They said that about the Galaxy Note 2. It looks dorky, but nobody puts a Hershey bar. It looks like a family size Hershey bar smack on your head. I understand that, but nobody really does that anymore. Anyway, we use Bluetooth. We use wireless. We don't. Who even talks on the phone? I don't talk on the phone. I hate the phone. I text. Yeah. I play the Simpsons game. That's all I do.
I just think that Apple's starting to fall a little bit out of step. The fact that when the iPhone 5 came out and they just stretched the screen longer instead of acknowledging that people want to use a phone not just to get email, but also as a book reader, as a game device, as all this sort of stuff. All of those things are enhanced by having a real larger screen instead of just a nominally larger screen. Right. That the fact they missed that is kind of surprising to me. When you compare it to every other operating system that's on the market right now, we're talking about some basic wonderful features that are evident to anybody who uses it on day one or day two, like the way that on Android and Windows Phone that applications can talk to each other and share information with each other, the way that keyboards work a lot more effectively, the way that the customizability that lets you it's important for the iPhone to be really easy to use for people who, again, just don't care and people who are intimidated by technology, but there
it's
are ways.
It's your grandma's phone.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. But what I'm getting at is that there are two different kinds of categories of ways you make technology easier. One way, one category is the stuff that makes it easier to use once you get out of the box and you're learning it. But all of those advantages kind of end after 2 or 3 weeks once you've learned it. The other category of stuff that makes technology easier to use is the stuff where 6 months from now, 8 months from now, a year from now, when you get to sort of dial it in the way that you hope this device to work, and that actually winds up making it much, much easier. The iPhone has a lot of that first kind of stuff, very little of that second kind of stuff. And I think that now that they have real competition in the form of alternatives that are just as elegantly designed, just as beautiful, and have these additional features that Apple doesn't seem to have any interest in, here's where Apple's going to have to make that decision. Do they want to continue to be that major, overwhelmingly competitive platform, or are they going to be happy with being more like macOS, where they certainly don't have the majority of the installations out there, but they don't care since they're making so much money off of every one of these things that they sell?
I think you're right. Yeah. I think Apple is a boutique company. Probably is their future. Go ahead, John.
That may be minimizing a little bit.
No, I totally agree. I think that is the next place that they really all the services that they offer on the phone. I think we've seen this push of people starting to replace those core apps with apps from the App Store, whether it's Calendar, Address Book, any of the main apps, because they just haven't been updated. They don't work, and they're not as robust as what Android offers in some ways, and the customization as well not as robust. So I think
just look at the share menu. Just a perfect example is the share menu on the iPhone. It's who Apple lets you share with: Twitter and now Facebook. On Android, it's any app you install, and it can get a very ungainly long list, but at least you have the choice of who you want to share with.
Honestly, there's I'm running.
Hopefully, we see more and. But like the next version, iOS 7, that is just a change. It is a real change, and I'm hoping
it's not the Apple culture. The Apple culture is control, and I think that people are starting to grate on people. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, I was just about to say, as it happens, I'm writing a piece for Tech Hive I'm going to file on Tuesday. I don't know when they're going to be putting it out, maybe next week. That really is all about how I'm sort of moving away from the iPhone and towards Android. And one of the main reasons is that it's so much easier to manage information on the Android device. I love the fact that I can I'm driving to a friend's house. I pull up their names in address book, and then the Android app says, "Oh, do you want to send this to Waze so you can navigate there, or do you want to send it to Twist so that you can notify this person of your status?" So easy. You don't have to keep ducking out of multiple things. And that's what I'm talking about. It's that day-to-day stuff that Android makes so much easier to operate than on an iPhone. And that's what worries me, that I just you just when you identify yourself as someone who uses Apple stuff, you know, I've had, unfortunately, I shot my mouth off so many times since the iPhone came out, saying that the only reason why I use the iPhone is because it's the best thing out there for what I like to do. And as soon as something else comes out that's better, oh, I'm going to switch to that in a heartbeat. I'm not an Apple fanboy. And now it's like, well, no, damn it. Now I do have to switch to Android because it does work better for me.
Andy, I've been working on you for a whole year. I'm finally got to you. I'm not a fanboy of any company. I am a fan of technology, and I think you should use the best technology. And if something's better, it's better. Apple's not down and out. I'm telling you, there's still opportunity. But I really wonder about the iPhone 5. To me, this encapsulates the whole thing. 127 pixels taller. It was either dumb or cynical. It was either dumb, they kind of missed the boat on what people wanted, or it was a little bit cynical. Let's eke a little bit more out of this ecosystem before we move on. And either way, I think it was an error. And I think this year will tell. A 5S is not going to do it. It's not going to do it.
Leo, I think that, as Steve Ballmer once said, it's developers, 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 and that's why took this platform, because they have this ecosystem. So here's a little...
Yeah, but look, there are more apps now. There will be, by June, more apps on Android than on iOS.
Well, except I made the decision to go with the iPhone 5 after almost crossing over to the Galaxy S3. The reason I did not do it had to do with carriers and also had to do with the ecosystem. My family is all uses iPhones. I have a lot invested in this, and a lot of the things that I do when I stay in communication with people involve things like Find My Friends and that type of...
Inertia is not a marketing plan.
But it locked me in. And so when I saw what was going on with the iPhone 5, and I made my decision right after the announcement, I also like the ergonomics of the size of it in my hand. I thought at the time that the S3 was too big. I do a lot of things one-handed with my
I do a lot of things one-handed too, but it doesn't usually involve the phone.
Yeah.
Hey!
Oh, God.
I'm sorry, Joanna. That wasn't what you thought it was. I'm playing Simpsons Tapped Out, and it's a one-handed.
Right. I know you were talking about your Galaxy Note.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now I walk into the joke about a stylus, and I'm just going to...
I actually like the stylus on the Note.
Let me finish this tale.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I derailed it completely. I apologize.
So I didn't get the S3, and one of the reasons was it was too big, because I couldn't do things one-handed with it. But then I have been reviewing the Note, and I love the Note.
Yeah.
Because you can't do something one-handed with it. You have to use two hands, and you make peace with that.
You do.
And it makes it worthwhile. And so I have to wait another year and a half or so for my contract to come up. But if Apple hasn't come up with anything that improves the size of the phone or a much better, a much more innovative operating system, I too will probably jump.
I submit that this really has more to do with how we are changing use habits. This used to be a phone, and as it moves more towards a computer, real estate becomes more and more important. And how big it is against your ear becomes less important.
Although you still do pick up the phone when the phone rings.
Yeah, I know. I just get over it.
You pick it up and you hold it. But
I'm used to people mocking me. It's okay.
The Galaxy Note is big, but it's, you're not going to,
It's not that big. You can still put it in your...
It fits in my shirt.
You know, when I first started holding this up to my ear, people laughed. Now it doesn't look that weird. You just get used to it. Same thing as people taking a picture with their iPad, At first, people got...
That still looks weird, too.
Still looks weird? You live in New York. You're just not exactly a trendsetter.
Yeah. But I will say that that's one area in which I had to. I really was humbled, because when I first saw that they're putting good cameras onto tablets, of course I said that, oh, that's silly. No one's going to do that way. And then you know what? I was wrong. Every time I walk through Boston tourist spots, I will see someone holding up an iPad.
Everywhere.
I saw. You're not going to believe this. You're going to say, Andy, you're a lying liar whose lying mouth is full of lies. I saw somebody in Copley Square taking a picture of Trinity Church with a BlackBerry Playbook tablet.
Oh, dear.
I know. So that's how wrong I was. That even if you have this awful, awful tablet, you will still use it as a camera. Okay, I was wrong.
I'm about to ask if it was like a homeless person or something.
This is what they give us at the shelter. we get surplus cheese and playbooks. We're going to take
it. Maybe I shouldn't be a representative of ABC.
Yes, you should. You're so great. We love you. Speaking of which, we're going to all slam.
I should be a representative someplace.
I'm going to give you a chance to slam CBS because already the exodus has begun.
In that conversation.
You can recuse yourself if you choose. Before we do that, though, let's see what the score is in the football game here. Oh, the Patriots. We might be seeing your team, Andy, in New Orleans.
There you go.
I'm excited.
We've got an insurmountable 3-point lead in the first quarter, so it's over. I may as well turn this TV back on.
You know, Padre S.J. Father Robert Ballister, host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, I think he's going to be one of the chaplains for the Super Bowl. So we might
Does he need a co-chaplain?
Exactly.
I've already got the black sweater.
You'd look good in a cassock, my friend.
There you go.
It's not too late. You could take the cloth. All right,
I do have my own coin if you need it for the coin toss.
Those are pretty, those coins, the commemorative coins. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Tom Merritt with a look at the week ahead.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the stories we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Tuesday, January 22nd, it's earnings day for a bunch of companies, IBM, Google, and Verizon. And then the next day, Wednesday, January 23rd, Apple will have its Q1 2013 earnings. Also on Wednesday, the Pebble Watch is supposed to ship. Thursday, January 24th, more earnings. Microsoft has their report, and then Nokia has theirs as well. And Friday, January 25th, the SimCity beta kicks off. Very excited about that. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
This is Twit Tech News Today.
I don't think Apple does what they do because of shareholders, but you certainly don't see shareholders criticizing Apple for taking unnecessary risks. You see them criticizing them for not paying out dividends because they have a big pile of cash.
Ham Nation.
This microphone, which is in phase, and this microphone is out of phase. But watch what happens when I take these two signals and put them together. If I want to get rid of my carrier, they both work, but together, gone. Gone.
This Week in Enterprise Tech.
I brought home a lot of gadgets and gizmos from CES. it's kind of, Tabor knows this. When I'm at CES, I don't go by the name of Padre or Father Robert. I actually have a badge that says PRYZE. WHOR. It's kind of what I do.
Gizwiz.
The 512 gig is available now with a MSRP of roughly $1,750.
He fell. He's on the floor.
By the way,
they actually thought he died. They got a CPR kit.
Actually had a heart attack.
I'm sure it's still on Amazon.
Twit. Now, where'd I put my iPhone?
Did you go to CES? Oh, Joanna's. Are you there?
I'm here.
Sorry.
She fell
just,
over, too.
Just playing with my BlackBerry.
Oh, I know how that is. Got to get a. Can you tweet from that?
I refuse to tweet from it.
But you could. If you wanted to, you could tweet from it.
There is a Twitter app, but it's takes horrible. A lot of effort to have an update.
Yeah.
So, I don't tweet from.
I used to have a BlackBerry.
Just read email.
I had a Curve, and I was a Twitter user in 2007, so I'm pretty sure that I tweeted from the BlackBerry. That was my phone before I got the iPhone.
It has an app, but it's just terrible.
I really want BlackBerry to survive. I just loved my old BlackBerry. I miss it.
I know. I think. A lot of us out there.
Yeah. It'd be nice if they did all right. So did you go to CES, Joanna?
I also tweeted. I did. It was a crazy, exhausting week, and I think I've maybe just started recovering.
Yeah, I know. Did you see anything that at all intrigued you?
I saw a lot of stuff.
How do you feel about the dish hopper?
Oh, right. I didn't even really see it. I didn't see it.
You too? I didn't see it either. Did you go?
I got press release about it. I mean, I don't really cover a lot of that stuff, but no. It seemed like a good product.
It's actually cool. It is a DVR that records all the major networks. ABC would like it because it records. But then it lets you skip the commercials, which is awesome for users. So everybody should be happy, except the major networks, which are all suing Dish for the Hopper.
Yeah.
And, of course, CNET. We now have learned CNET lied. The first press release from CNET said the Hopper was a nominee in the Best of CES, but due to ongoing litigation between our parent company, CBS, and Hopper and Dish over the Hopper, we are going to remove all Dish products from the list. And then later it turned out that not only had it been nominated, but it in fact had won Best of Show. That information got back to the executive suite at CBS, who immediately said, no freaking way. This story from Joshua Topolsky in The Verge, who is probably rubbing his hands with glee. I can just see him doing that. Wow. And apparently it was very emotional for the folks, the CNET editorial staff. CBS Interactive News Senior Vice President and General Manager Mark Larkin was the guy who had to tell the staff that the Hopper cannot win, that it would be removed from consideration, and that you have to revote and pick a new winner. Sources say Larkin was distraught while delivering the news, at one point in tears, as he told the team he had fought CBS executives who had made the decision. And according to Topolsky in The Verge, the word was passed from Leslie Moonves, the CEO of CBS. In fact, Moonves once told investors, Hopper cannot exist. If Hopper exists, we will not be in business with Dish. Greg Sandoval, to his credit, who's one of the editors at CNET, has quit. As far as I know, he's the only CNET editorial member who has quit. I'll let you off the hook, Joanna, because you work for ABC. It's in direct competition and so forth. What do you think, Dwight?
Well, I think that it's something probably that every journalist who works for a big company dreads happening. The the head of the parent company coming down and essentially saying, no, you can't cover that or deal with that in that way. I think it was a mistake by CBS. And, you know, the ultimate question you have to ask is, was their credibility is it worth the cost from their credibility to not have given the award to the Hopper? And I think probably it was more of an emotional and less of a rational decision on the part of Moonves to do that. You know, one interesting thing about the Sling, the Hopper with Sling, it automatically skips 30-second increments when it finds commercials. But the very first DVR
that was replay
did that as well.
And got sued out of existence.
So all of the DVRs let you fast forward to commercials. You just have to do it manually. Whether it does it for you, to me, seems like a minor aspect of it. But it's something that the networks are very much afraid of. You know, it's akin to, for websites, it's akin to having ad blockers on your website.
CBS had the nerve to release the following statement. CNET maintains 100% editorial independence and always will.
And they never doped either. They never failed a doping test.
CBS has nothing but the highest regard for the editors and writers at CNET. And has managed that business with respect as part of its interactive division since it was acquired in 2008. This has been an isolated and unique incident in which a product that has been challenged as illegal, well, that's a little bit of a broad stroke, was removed from consideration for the award. The product in question is not only the subject of a lawsuit between Dish and CBS, but between Dish and nearly every other major media company as well. And that's why it must be illegal. CBS has been consistent on this situation from the beginning. And in terms of covering actual news, CNET maintains, oh, they say it's not actual news. How can CBS say CNET maintains 100% editorial independence if they were told not? It's, you know what? Both companies have utterly lost any respect whatsoever. Mr. Larkin, I'll give you a job here, Mark Larkin, but you should quit. If you were in tears, you don't have to take it. You should quit. Greg Sandoval, nice job. I don't understand why anybody stays at CNET. Get another job. Go to work where somebody where you have they have some respect for you, because CBS clearly does not. Shocking.
Yeah, I mean that's absolutely clear. The role of a parent company to the news organizations that they own, that's a carefully worked out relationship. If CBS simply wanted to give itself some coverage against a future or an ongoing lawsuit, if they wanted to make sure that they weren't essentially handing Dish Network a weapon they could then beat them over the head with if they're trying when litigation ensues, it is that's the sort of thing where lawyers get together from both these branches and agree on wording that should be inserted inside the piece to make it absolutely clear to give them that sort of cover so that it won't affect any ongoing litigation. Obviously CBS is not going to be point for point explaining exactly why they made this decision, but that's it's very, very curious that they made these sort of quasi explanations, because I think anybody who's worked in the media knows that the CBS had many options available to them, far, far short of telling CNET, a supposedly a journalistic enterprise, not to cover a certain thing or not to talk about a certain thing. So that's why their explanations absolutely ring hollow.
Didn't CBS also say that in another statement that reviews are not journalism? They say that this was an exception because it had to do with product reviews as opposed to news? And you know, I would strongly disagree with the notion that product reviews, particularly at the level at which CNET operates, because they are people rely on them for fair and detailed reviews, that's not journalism. It is journalism, and so that's just that's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I just hope that none of this really applies towards the people who actually work for CNET, because it's hard to. I'm sure that this took most of them by surprise. It's very, very difficult to make really that decision where they're going to say, moving forward, am I going to quit this job? Am I going to say goodbye to this? I'm saying that I wouldn't. Personally, I wouldn't presume to say what I would do in that sort of situation. I believe that I would say that unless I want to define myself as an entertainer who works for the entertainment site CNET, I can't go forward. But
that's fair.
What was difficult for so many of these writers is that I feel for them, because you know there are times when I did a couple of things, made a couple appearances, appearing on tech panels on Fox News. Boy, did I get a lot of my followers and all my friends say, "Oh, come on, you're going on Fox News Channel?" And I say, "Well, Clayton is a very, very nice person. We don't have to talk about Karl Rove while discussing the iPhone 4. I think it's going to work out okay." So I just hate to think that all these people who work for CNET who have been doing very, very good work and doing good things for the benefit of their readers, now I hope they don't get tarred with the brush of, "Oh, well, of course, you're just the tools of the corporate puppet at this point, and I'm going to disregard everything you say." So I don't know.
How can they not? Because it was one thing last week we covered this story. We didn't know about the lies.
Yeah.
But now if they're lying and CBS says they're 100% editorial independence, which is apparently obviously not the case.
Only 80%.
They're 73% editorially independent. And then the CNET is their own release lied, saying it was in consideration when in fact it had won, presuming that Joshua's story is correct, and I have no reason not to believe that. I think that they've done irreparable damage to the brand.
That's absolutely true. I don't think they have to do serious damage control right now by putting in firm policies in place. If they're claiming this was an unusual circumstance and a one-off thing, the only way that they can really move forward after this is to say, we have spent the 2 weeks following that incident coming up with a very, very clear line of here's what the protocol is going to be, where if corporate has an issue with something, here is the protocol they have to follow, not to spike a piece that we're writing for CNET, but at least to have give them the opportunity to include whatever disclaimer, whatever separate sidebar corporate controlled content that they feel as though they have to do in order to give themselves coverage at the corporate level. But yeah, as soon as CNET defines himself as something that as a company that an outlet that only writes things that are approved by their corporate overlords, that's when they truly do become an entertainment site. They may as well become TMZ.
All right, I'm sorry. Well, I just got a little head up over all of this.
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean,
it reflects badly on us too, in a way, because then everybody starts to wonder, well, how, you know, what don't we know?
Yeah. Right. Well, so what I love is that Dish took the opportunity and accepted the award and has been running ads saying we won this award. But, you know, that's great.
That's ballsy.
No, that's brilliant, because they know that if CNET wants to say that, no, you didn't win this award, all they have to do is, oh, why do you say, because here's this press release, why are you saying we didn't win this award? Oh, because we're just corporate stooges who have to rescind. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, congratulations on the, that's okay, you can still say that you won the award. Please just let us go home now.
It's really, and the reason it's a hot button for me is why I stopped working for mainstream media, because I don't want that. You're right, Dwight, this is everybody's greatest fear, is that the CEO is on the line. Les Moonves is on the line, and he wants you to kill that story. You have no choice. You either kill the story and lose all self-respect, or you walk out the door. And it's not it's not a good choice, especially if you have bills and a family, and you got,
I don't know. That's why I worry. I mean, it's easy for me to say that I'm going to be raising the red banner of revolution and leading the crusade for successful journalism. That's okay, because I don't have kids. And I don't have kids who are not going to be able to get braces, not going to be able to get medical care, not going to have medical coverage, because I decided to make a principled stand. The what you have to do remains what you have to do. But I just hope this doesn't extend towards people saying really mean and ugly and nasty things about people who write for CNET, because that they decided that, okay, I'm going to have to eat a little crap because I really like this job and I really like the fact that my kids can get medical treatment.
I love this. This is the Dish ad on the website. Thank you to the chat room for passing this along. Dish Hopper named best in show asterisk. that's the way to play it. Nicely played. All right, because
I just had to say that if CBS corporate could have given them something even better than the idea that this thing has been named best in show, not only are they being best in show, but the company, the network, hates this product so much that they tried to suppress it. Oh man, that's like lines around the block to get this thing before the network bans
it. That's right.
Holy cow!
It becomes great crisis management, guys.
Unbelievable story. You know, it's interesting because the guy who invented Replay and was put out of business by the networks who sued Replay till they died. Now, you know what his company is now?
It's Roku, isn't it?
Roku.
Yeah.
So there could be a second act. Just, you got to understand. Let's see here. Moving along. all right, we're going to take a break. Then we're going to tell you why Wayne Dobson has a sign on his door that says, I don't have your cell phone. Go away.
That's a great story.
I love that story.
Stay tuned. But first, a word from our friends at Citrix, who have a way for you to start meeting wherever you are with anybody you need to meet. You don't even have to put on pants. It's go to meeting with HD Faces, the easy way to be more productive, to work smarter, but still spend less time at the office, to still be able to maybe travel less or travel more for yourself with GoToMeeting. It is very easy to install, Mac or PC. Just visit GoToMeeting.com. You don't need IT support to do it. It'll be installed in seconds. And then whenever you want to have a meeting, you click a link. It'll send out an email. Or you can be on the phone and say, hey, here's a meeting ID. And all of a sudden, you're meeting. And you're meeting Mac, PC, iPad, iPhone, Android. All can attend GoToMeetings. You can even present from an iPad. And if you've got a camera on your computer or your iPad, you can use that, and people are now seeing you in HD crystal clear video. It is so 21st century. I just love it. It is the way to have meetings. We do GoToMeetings all the time here. Just had one on Friday. GoToMeeting lets you stay connected. It lets you train. It lets you work with colleagues. It lets you present to clients. There are ways to do this. Of course, there are many ways to do this. But you don't want to make a client jump through hoops, sign up for an account, do all sorts of stuff. All you want to do is just say, hey, let's have a meeting. Click this link, and you're in. And that's what happens. Clients love it because it's fun. It's interesting. They go, oh, this is kind of neat. They see that presentation. It just works. GoToMeeting.com. You can try it free for 30 days. Use the promo code TWIT, if you will, so we get credit. GoToMeeting.com. Free for 30 days. Use the promo code TWIT. So who is Wayne Dobson? And why do people keep knocking on his door? What's the story, Joanna Stern?
The story is that this innocent man who lives in Las Vegas keeps getting people who have lost their phone and are using either Find My iPhone or another, I believe actually just the Find My iPhone, according to the original report. And they are ending up at his house because it is putting their phone there. But he doesn't have their phones, and this is a glitch in the system. I believe it's Sprint's network that this keeps happening on. And Sprint doesn't even really understand what's going on, and they say they've been looking into it. I know that was the last we had heard when ABC reached out to them. But this poor guy, and then people are knocking on his door, and he says, I think, there's a quote. He's like, I understand, but I don't have your phone.
Police have twice been wrongly directed to his house on domestic violence calls as well.
Right.
So what happened? He must be, what I'm thinking is he's near the cell tower. Because if a phone doesn't have a good GPS lock, it locates you in the general area of the cell tower. And so he must be right under a cell tower.
Or he's at the triangulation point.
Or the triangulation point.
Right.
But it happens, it's happened many times. Started in 2011. He said there was a knock on the door on a weekend about midnight. He opened the door, found an upset young couple demanding he turn over their phone. He says, I'm standing there and thinking, what are they talking about? They might as well have said, give me my horse back. After debating back and forth, they called the police. He's a 59-year-old guy. He says, I don't know these people. I don't go where they go. I don't care about the technology. These technology pets they have. He never heard from him again. But then a woman's wandering through his backyard. Before he could talk to her, she jumped over the wall. A few minutes later, he heard a knock on the door. She says, give me my phone. I've got pictures of my grandkids. I can't replace them. I need them. All I want is my pictures. Wow. So ABC's trying to get this guy. I mean, what a story he must have. Now he's got a...
Yeah, no, I mean, we were mostly trying to get Sprint.
What's going on?
Why is this happening? I mean, it seems to be just the Sprint phones, and I think they are iPhones.
I'm telling you, the Sprint tower is over his head. That's got to be it.
Yeah, but
this is the sign on his front door. It says, no lost cell phones. This location gives a false phone locator position that a cell tower is behind this home. Oh, yeah, there is. To a cell tower behind this home. Please contact the North Las Vegas Police and Fire Alarm Report. No lost cell phones. So the moral is, do not buy a house underneath a cell tower, because it's going to happen more. Aren't the cell towers right across the street? On top of the Petaluma Hotel, I think.
Yeah, you can see them on the corner of them.
So if you lost your phone, you can come here. We don't have it either. I'm starting to read stories about the U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz, who was prosecuting Aaron Swartz, and apparently she's fairly upset. The statement they gave was pretty bland, and they said, we offered him a plea bargain of 6 months in a low security setting But at Aaron Swartz's funeral, his family said the feds killed our son. There's a petition to unseat her now that has crossed 25,000 signatures. She is really become the poster boy or poster girl for all of this. No official comments. But a very sad, a very sad story, a tragic story, and MIT is investigating why they weren't more forthright in saying drop this prosecution.
You're also starting to have legislators get involved. Texas Senator John Cornyn has inserted himself into it and said he wants answers from the Justice Department as to why this investigation and this prosecution was so intense, given the crime.
The crime is essentially a terms of service violation. That's why Zoe Lofgren, who is a member of Congress from this area, has proposed what she calls Aaron's Law, to change this so it decriminalizes terms of service violations. I mean, you shouldn't be threatened with 35 years in jail and a $4 million fine because you violated JSTOR's terms of service. He broke the law, but and even admitted to breaking the law. But to pursue him this vigorously really was inappropriate. And we have lost somebody who was, I think, fairly important. Somebody said, don't blame Kim.com for piracy. Go after the real pirates. And somebody in the chat room, Glee. Those are the pirates. Our good friend Jonathan Colton, who has a wonderful cover. We played it when we interviewed Jonathan not so long ago for Triangulation of Baby Got Back. He just tweeted. He said, look, Leon Fox ripped off my cover of Baby Got Back. Never even contacted me. He says they even sampled, after listening, they even sampled my recording. That duck quack was in the recording. So since they stole it from Jonathan, let's steal it back from them. This does sound a lot like his arrangement. Even down to the banjo.
I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. When a girl walks in with a nitty bitty waist and a round thing in your face. You get sprung, you want
to I gotta play the Colton version now. It sounds just like it.
I have it ready if you want to pause.
All right, let me pause that. That's the Glee version. This is the original.
Face with the Oakland booty.
It's exactly the same.
I like big butts and I cannot lie. You are the brother.
That I gotta say. Glee's done this since day one. In fact, I know the guy who does these. And he told me. He said, no, we just take the song. And then we wait for the cease and desist order. And then we say, well, how much? That's how they work. So Johnny C, baby, go after him. They'll send you a check.
So you can even hear.
The quack is the same. Are you going to find the quack?
Well, this is them played right on top of each other. Can you tell?
Sounds like one song.
Yeah. The other funny thing is that Glee did not change the lyric, yes. Johnny C's in trouble.
Oh, wow.
Which is not. Now I want to hear the Sir Mix-a-Lot version. Will you play that?
I don't have that one queued.
Well, I'll find it.
Okay.
I'll point out that this is a little bit different. This is the original version of the song. I mean, I got to skip the, commercial from KitchenAid. KitchenAid apparently likes big butts just as much as Sir Mix-a-Lot. I don't know if we could play that. We can't play that beginning part with the girls talking probably because it's kind of inappropriate. Not that the rest of the song is not inappropriate. But I was taking any excuse. Here we go. Oh, no. Okay, don't show the video either. Okay, now you can play.
All right, you don't want to be pulled.
It's so round. It's like out there. Gross.
Here we go. Sir Mix-a-Lot, hit it.
I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't.
Now, why didn't Glee do this version?
In your face.
You get sprung. That sounds just like the Glee version. Thanks for blinking the lights. They left the Johnny C in. Holy cow.
We're having a light switch rave.
That's the best we could do. We flip the light switch really fast.
Didn't Colton say that basically there's not much he can do because an arrangement isn't something you can copyright.
It's not his song.
Rights belong. Right, it's not his song. He did a cover, and so
it's kind of disingenuous. I doubt he's called Sir Mix-a-Lot in the first place, right? Yo, Mix, I like to record your song. Can I add banjo?
Well, he did. He did get a license to record and release that.
Right? Oh, okay.
So, I mean, because there's been so much really, like Neelay Patel, of course, anything involving the law, you get tech guy.
He's on.
Also a former lawyer. Right, exactly. And so there's so many different opinions being written about this that there is very little he can do because, early opinion is that because it is an arrangement and not the original song, they can essentially copy his arrangement verbatim. However, that the fact that if they take his actual master recordings, that's something else entirely. And if if Colton actually added something to it, like something as simple as saying Johnny C's in trouble, that essentially that content. Exactly. That essentially is something that he owns that they couldn't take. But once again, we're in the misty realm of lawyers in which we're in a maze of misty passages, all alike and all legal, in which we just simply sit back, find out who writes a check to whom, or if someone just gets disgruntled. Although as if to cap it off, though, the musical coordinator for Glee, after this started to really become a firestorm on Twitter, didn't he tweet back something like, "I guess some people don't know how to make advantage of an opportunity when it's presented to them." Like, ooh.
Ooh.
Thank you, Mr. Glee. I'm so glad you stole my work. Please, have a basket of mini muffins. No, full-size muffins, I think. Ooh. Good heavens. That's definitely doubling down on being a...
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, girlfriend.
Oh, yes. Indeed, Leo, I did... went there.
You gone there?
Yes.
And I don't think you're getting back. You are stuck there, Andy and Otko. Apparently Escapist Magazine published the timeline of tweets. And we're really overdoing this story. But it gave me an excuse to play Sir Mix-a-Lot. And that's you know, legitimately, I think, and that's my defense if they try to take us down.
Well, it's Colton. Every geek loves Colton.
We love Colton. Johnny C is a friend of mine. So Colton asked Michelle TGP, Music is Life, "Hey, can I ask, where did you get that recording? Are you certain it's from Glee?" She says, "No, I'm just a Glee fan who uploads Glee songs. I'm sorry for what they did." It's from a Tumblr, which links back to a Brazilian fan site that also lists Baby Got Back as appearing in the 11th episode of Season 4. Swedish iTunes store lists the Glee version of Baby Got Back as a single.
And apparently was available on other editions of the iTunes store before it was pulled down.
So is there an issue? Did it maybe not appear on Glee?
What I have read is that it was going to be part of an upcoming episode. The producers have not said one thing one way or another whether it is not, will or will not be. However, it's also being reported that it was available for download as an official Glee track on the iTunes store.
Got it.
Let's search Ardia.
I like big butts and I cannot lie.
But isn't it amazing that they would do, even if they ran it past the lawyers and said, "Nope, make sure you re-record it. Don't copy his master tracks. But yes, you can steal it that blatantly." It's just amazing to me that they don't understand that this isn't just some guy, a street performer that they decided to copy off. This is somebody who has a very large following. He's not Elton John playing Las Vegas, but he has a very serious following. This is going to be found, and these people are connected very much to social media, and they can make this look very, very bad for them.
Like I say, I think this is the MO for Glee, frankly. This is what they do. I know this for a fact. I've known this for years. This is what they do, and it's probably well known in the music industry as well. And just they forgot to send the memo to Johnny C.
Yeah, I wonder could they have fixed this by simply saying, "Hey, we're fans of your stuff. We really want to use this arrangement. Our lawyers say that we can actually just use it without compensating you. We would like to at least notify you and see if we can give you." You know, find yourself a pretty dress in a shop window. We'll have it sent to your apartment. at least, because sometimes people are not necessarily saying, "Oh boy, Glee's going to use one of my songs. I never have to work again a day of my life because they're going to be paying me so much money." They just want acknowledgement that the work that they do has value and can't simply be copied. And also, I mean, there's what really bugged me the most is that Glee has a larger audience than Jonathan Colton does. And now maybe there's
it's
a
good for Johnny.
Well, no, right. Not necessarily. Well, it's yes,
if they had
but
proper
also,
credit.
Yeah. Well, but what I'm saying is that now if he plays his orchestra, his arrangement of Baby Got Back in concert now, are people going to say, "Oh, look, he's doing he decided to do that track that was on Glee last season. Oh, isn't that cute?" Without knowing that, no, he created this arrangement. Now it belongs to him less than it would have if Glee had not copied this. I mean, if this actually goes out on the air that way.
Yeah. So. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know what I think? If Johnny Colton is smart, he'll ask for an appearance on Glee. That would be the way to do it.
As a guy did
he could be the hip music teacher who comes in and teaches the whole Glee group how to play the banjo.
If you don't know an opportunity when you see it, you know, he should contact him, ask for some money, and ask for an appearance. And
forget the money, just an appearance. He could give him, you know, SAG-AFTRA points. They're good at major U.S. Retailers everywhere.
Let him come on and do Code Monkey. I want to see the Glee version of Code Monkey.
They could do an entire Colton episode. It would be huge. People who watch Glee are geeks and love Colton.
They probably did. Maybe this is like the all Jonathan Colton episode where they start open up with Mr. Fancy Pants.
I love Mr. Fancy Pants.
How much of his content can we use without giving him as much as like one Diet Dr. Pepper in compensation
for it? They could do a whole Fancy Pants parade.
Exactly. And afterwards, the teens could have a Fancy Pants dance at the high school. You see, it all comes together.
Let's take a break. When we come back, how to communicate your displeasure with neighbors using Wi-Fi. I wish I'd thought of this years ago. But first, a word from Audible.com. Audible is the place where you can get those great audiobooks, 100,000 plus books. I am such an Audible fan. I am now on book 2 of the King Killer Chronicles. Started with The Name of the Wind, now the new one. I can't put this thing down. I don't have to because it's in my car. It's in my gym. When I walk the dog, when I clean the house, I'm listening to great books, all sorts of great literature from audible.com. I'm a big fan, and every time I go here, I want, like, this new book, this controversy about Scientology. This is the book everybody's talking about Scientology, and it's already on Audible. Lawrence Wright's Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. I can't wait to read that. Got to put that on my list. What do you listen? Andy's a big Audible fan. What are you listening to today?
The Scientology book has been on my radar since they ran a very, very long excerpt and was the Harvard Reporter. But I'm sure they're putting excerpts everywhere. And it's like, okay, this could be interesting. There might be a book that I would want to like go into a real bookstore and pay cash for, so there's no digital trail that I own this book and read it.
Too late. I've already looked on the web. They know I'm looking at it. Yeah.
Damn it. I'm in the social graph already. Damn you, Facebook.
That's called friction-free sharing, Andy. We think you'll like it.
Thanks for the lack of friction. I feel very lubed up by you, Mr. Thank you very much. But the other book that's on my wish list is I'm trying to figure out which David Rakoff book I want to get. He did three or four collections of essays before he died, and each one of them, what attracts me is I read the essay he did about the movie and the play Rent, which
I loved. Hit,
yeah, it's well I. I've always had the same opinion about that musical, which is that you're turning a terrible disease. I felt as though it turned a terrible disease into the same sort of thing that tuberculosis got turned into, you know, with the source material of it, where
La Boheme, Rent is La Boheme, so that's exactly right.
But I thought that we've already just like W.S. Gilbert famously mocked the idea of highbrow art by saying, "Well, why don't we have prostitutes dying of consumption and freezing garrets, that will make it sufficiently heavy for you." And also, you had this—I don't know—I was also affected by the movie, which you have once again one of those documentary filmmakers whose documentary style is to sort of like wave a camera in the general direction of people moving without any idea of point of view. It was a really cool. Cynicism is not a great aspect for life, but it is a wonderful way to write an essay, and I really enjoy that. So I don't have a particular book I'm choosing yet, but it's definitely on my list.
He's got Half Empty is one of them. Don't Get Too Comfortable and Fraud. Boy, they all sound good. And now this is tough. And then of course Audible says people who bought Half Empty also bought I Don't Care About Your Band. What I learned from indie rockers, trust funders, pornographers, felons, faux sensitive hipsters, and other guys I've dated. Now I want to get that book.
Right.
It's an endless chain of great books. I'm not going to say literature. I don't know if this is literature, but I kind of want to read it. And that's what's fun about going to audible.com. So here we go. I'm going to get you two books. That's a great start. Free. Go to audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for the Platinum account. The first, that's the two books a month thing, but your first month is free. Your first two books are free. You cancel at any time, pay nothing if you want, and you still get to keep the books. The trick is always, which two books? There's so many great ones. As with other plans, you also get a free subscription to the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times Daily Audio. And I got to say, that's fantastic. I mean, if you don't have time to read the paper, listen to the New York Times Daily Audio, and you're already up to date, or Wall Street Journal. That's part of the deal. Audible.com/twit, the number two. Audible, to me, it changed my life. And that's why I'm really happy to share it with you. Audible.com/twit2. Give it a try today. So have you ever done this? Has anybody ever done this? Use, in the name of your Wi-Fi access spot, something like, your music is annoying. And then the response, because they misspelled your, is your grammar's more annoying. In the SSID. Brilliant.
So I live around the corner from a bar.
Yeah.
And it's called The Flat. And one of the people who live around me one day came up with an SSID that just said, The Flat sucks. Because the people come out of there at 2 in the morning. They're loud. They leave beer bottles on people's lawns. And everybody who lives around here was cheering, going, yeah, who is that guy? You know, he was kind of saying what we all think.
Yeah, I love that.
Pump up the volume.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that, Joanna?
I'm looking at the ones in my apartment. They're not very interesting.
So you live in an apartment in New York City. You probably got 20 access points, right?
Yeah, definitely. Even more here, probably. Not very interesting.
Nothing good?
Buddy.
Why don't you start something, Joanna?
Barbara's Wi-Fi network. Mine is actually not welcome.
Good. You could do FBI honeypot. You could...
Mine is FBI truck 4.
Ha! Like it. Surveillance van 63.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that one.
Yeah, these are boring.
Get off of my LAN, B-Tree suggests. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Get off of my LAN.
Ed says my neighbor's name is Guido, and his Wi-Fi access point is called the G-Spot. Not for you. Virus-ridden network somebody has. Pretty Fly for Wi-Fi. Gosh, our chat room has better Wi-Fi names than...
Definitely than mine.
Yeah. There's one free internet is the one you see at the airports and stuff, and that's just a bug, a Windows bug. Virus.exe, that would be a good name. Yep. Yep. I promise not to hack you, says Beef. That's good.
I wonder if you could have a Wi-Fi base station name that was actually like a buffer overflow hack.
Oh.
Or just dumps JavaScript.
Wouldn't that be good?
into your menu bar and hopes to execute something.
Or SQL command, you know, table clear or
exactly.
Something like
that. Yeah. Table dump.
Table drop. Web 9840 says Abraham Linksys. That's not bad. Law enforcement, I like that. Get your own. Stop yelling at your wife. Okay, I like that. Just thought I'd pass that along. They came to us.
I think the best one would be you left your webcam on. You'll turn off your chat camera for God's sake.
He's in the house. Leap Motion strikes a deal. I'm very interested in Leap Motion. I don't know if I haven't played with it. Any of you played with Leap Motion yet? This is the idea that you wave at your computer instead of using a mouse.
It's kind of like Kinect, right? Yeah. It's Kinect for your computer.
Yeah.
Have you played with it?
I don't know if I've done a Leap, but I've done a couple of the other ones.
The idea is that they've done a deal, by the way, with Best Buy. Best Buy is going to take orders, pre-orders in February and sell the Leap sometime in spring. They got a deal to bundle with Asus PCs, as well as a $30 million round of funding, B round. Apparently, they've put out 12,000 Leaps to developers, so they've got a product, and it will launch with an app store. Filled with applications built around the Leap.
This sounds to work with any application. In other words, you can't bring up your copy of Chrome and swipe through pages, or you have to have a Leap-aware application.
Well, it was my understanding it kind of replaces a mouse. So anything that's mouse-aware would work, but I guess if you had a Leap-aware application, it could do even more, right, like the Kinect could do. It is accurate to within a hundredth of a millimeter. And I'm looking at these Leap screens. I don't see any. There must be a camera somewhere, right? Or I don't know. Is it using your webcam? should be very interesting.
There's a peripheral that sits on your table.
Okay.
It's yes.
Okay, so there is something that's just not in the pictures. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, all they need is any actual real human being who wants to interact with their computer this way. I mean, Microsoft had success with there because they actively produced it as here is for gaming where you can actually get interactive with the game. That's really, really cool. It kind of reminds me of all these companies that are making like 3D viewer goggles that are
Oculus like, Rift got so much attention at CES.
Yeah, well,
that looks exhausting.
LCD shutter glasses that they work pretty well, but they still can't convince anybody that they want to use goggles instead of an actual monitor. And so until that actually meets that critical mass, they're selling it to like dentists who use that as a way, use that as a way to enhance their services. They're selling to real estate people. They're selling to law enforcement and police and the military. And so I'm sure that they'll find ways to actually use this. People who are actually selling services that where they can build a bespoke application that for which this is perfect. But otherwise, you know, great. Here's the amount of money you need to spend for a box that you can't use for software that doesn't exist. Oh, and this actually costs money. It's not free. Okay. Thank you for. It's like, at what point do you hit the abort switch on this pitch?
Yeah. By the way, somebody. Go ahead.
That looks like serious gorilla arms. I mean, look at it. I mean,
you don't want to have to always keep your arms straight out. But maybe they could then have a secondary product line of armrests.
If I could sit back in my chair and do like this, just do this,
Well, that's you could
through, that's what I would like.
Well, you put the thing in your lap.
That's not cool. You know,
my camera doesn't go back far enough, but I recently built for myself a really big, wide easel out of pine that keeps 1, 2, 3 tablets and a phone right here. Outside of camera range, and I'm actually finding that this is a wonderful. You can't see it, but it's a lot like the command station on Star Trek: The Next Generation that Data used to work at. You know, where my hands, it just sort of is at an angle and on a level where my hands would naturally fall, and that's sort of caused me in the past couple weeks since I've set this up to sort of change my mind about the gorilla arms concept. If you are sitting at a desk and the screen is 2 feet away, yes, that is very tiring. If you're in a comfortable chair and you're at a piece of furniture that's designed to hold a tablet right where you'd want it to be, I've got a really nice wall of glass that's providing a lot more information much more interactively and quickly than a computer with a screen is. Yeah. So maybe we're still just waiting for that iPad moment where someone figures out how to perfectly articulate this idea so that people will just simply fall over themselves to start using it.
Well, we know that Microsoft really hasn't capitalized on Kinect. I kept waiting for something good to happen.
Yeah,
and they even did a Kinect for Business, but I don't know, and nothing's really happened there.
And Kinect support is built into Windows 8.
Yeah,
it's in Windows 8.
It's what we isn't the minority. That's what we want, the Minority Report interface.
Yeah, but I think the Kinect support is more for gaming than anything else.
Right. Well, it's just not as good.
For Windows 8. I don't think they are really thinking that people are going to be using meetings to say, now if you look at this report here.
Yeah,
you can tell that our projections are. You know, I don't think that's what they're intending it for. It still is a gaming platform until society decides that we are actually ready to start dealing with computers this way. It's difficult enough getting them to interact with their computers via voice on a mobile device.
Right.
When you give them something where they don't even understand what the UI language is, you know, is there a click? Is there a drag? Is there a double click? Is there a swipe? Is there a tap? People don't understand what that vocabulary is yet. So.
You could have said the same thing before the iPad came out about touch, pinch, zoom, and all that. That was all a new vocabulary. But we learned it pretty quick.
Yeah, but even then, we understand the idea of an on-screen button that we actually reach out and click on. We're just using our fingertip as a way of making that interaction. So what is the analog for? Are we actually trying to grab something? Are we actually trying to move something? It's a fascinating problem that I'm not sure that we're going to see a solution to in the next couple of years.
Two more things to hate about Facebook. The young couple who said, if I get 1 million likes, we're going to sleep together. and then the Facebook page from two siblings. They wanted a family dog. They said, if we get 1 million likes, we get a family dog. They got 2.6 million Facebook likes. The dad is probably really... He did not want a dog. So he said, oh, just, yeah, get a million Facebook likes and I'll get you a dog. They did.
Father of the year, he then said that actually this was actually public. This was my way of telling my kid that we're not ready to have a dog yet. This would not be a fun environment for a dog to live in. And despite the fact that you gave him 2 million likes, I'm still not going to give him a dog because that's how responsible a dog owner I would be. The fact that I know that an apartment which people are going in and out all day is not a good place for a dog.
this lucky animal.
A cute story.
It is. It was from ABC News. You guys found this story.
Yeah, I mean, we had him on Good Morning America, so I'm sure that's part of how they got so many likes. But I think they had like a million by the time they were on Good Morning America.
Two girls and a puppy on Facebook. It's a very popular page.
Safe search filter on.
Andy Inokos with the Chicago Sun-Times and, of course, a regular on Mac Break Weekly. He does Inokos Almanac on the 5x5 network at 5x5.tv. Anything else you want to plug?
Yes, I also do an audiobook edition of my tech columns on another 5x5 podcast called Old Tech News. Or you can check out my Twitter at Inotco and my blog at Inotco.com. Infrequently updated because too many people are asking me to write things for money for me to actually start putting things on my blog. Unfortunately, I'm lazy.
I do like that idea of taking the reading the old columns. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I really enjoy that a lot. Also, it's so much nicer when you know that you have, you know, 8 minutes of stuff written out for you, and all you have to do is use the announcer voice and read it quite carefully, and then that's all you have to do.
Is that it? You already did all the work. You already wrote it.
Like, as a matter of fact, that's why I built like this deck so that I can have like a good reading platform. So I'm enjoying it a lot. I just recorded the fifth episode. It should be posted sometime tomorrow.
Mr. Dwight Silverman is with the Houston Chronicle, blog.cron.com/techblog. He's their social media manager.
That I am, I still keep my hand in the tech blog. I also have the Wednesday night Technology Bite show on KPFT, kpft.org. And Leo, you're welcome to come back.
I want to do that show soon, yeah. Just let me know.
We'll get you on. We'll get you back on.
It's a fun show to do because you have like 18 hosts.
Yes, it's chaotic. What you need to do is come in to Houston for the first Friday of the month and come to one of our geek gatherings.
Okay.
And you should roll on in.
I'd love to do that.
It's a blast.
That sounds like fun. Thank you, Dwight. Great to see you again. Glad you're feeling better. Dwight had the flu for a while. I'm glad you're feeling better.
I sounded like Barry Dwight last week.
Hello, baby.
Hello,
baby. Joanna Stern is a technology editor for ABC News. So nice to see you. I can't believe it's been a year. Don't make it a year again, okay?
Apparently it was May, but we need to do this.
It feels like a year.
It did feel like a year.
You're so great. I really appreciate it, and I just want to apologize for everything that we said today.
No, that's the excitement of doing these.
We don't get many women around here, and now you know why.
That's the excitement of doing these. I know. Becky Worley has warned me.
Yeah. Well, Becky's worse than anybody. Are you kidding?
I know she's pretty bad. Becky,
when the conversation goes in the gutter when Becky's here. She warned you against us? I warned you about her.
It's all
good friends. At Joanna Stern on the Twitter. Thank you, dear. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, guys. Sexist. Thank you, dear.
I gotta go eat dinner.
Go eat dinner.
I know you're talking to me. Enjoy.
I like faded. I faded I don't know, 30 minutes ago. I was just like,
sugar.
Must
you got to bring with you. Well, they didn't warn you that when you do twit, you've got to bring supplies for at least several days. It's a long ass show.
Seriously, I should have ordered food.
I've had a cheeseburger. I've been to the bathroom 4 times. I finished a Mickey a wide mouth. I mean, this goes on and on.
I don't see how Pornell survives it, frankly.
He also fades towards the end. Right.
That's why when you become a regular on Twit, they send you a coffee mug, a good microphone, and a box of those astronaut diapers.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Twit.
Amazing.